Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk car maintenance and repair with none other than Gordon Fricke. It's been a couple few months since he's been on the air with us, so it's great to have him back. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. If you have a car question, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Always better to get your question in earlier rather than later. It's a popular show, and Gordon is here. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, your car calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program with us today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for many years. We'll just leave it at that. We haven't counted the rings. We're not sure. If you have a question about cars, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Or 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, it's been a while. How you doing, man?
Yeah, great. Good to be here. Good to see you.
So in June, we had the fun drive.
Yes.
Canceled the show. Last month, you were moving in on your new digs.
Yes. I sold my giant shop in the village, and I moved into a smaller facility a couple miles out of the village. So we couldn't make it due to the closing. I tried to convince the bank that the show must go on, but they said no.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. All right. Well, it's working out well for you?
Yeah,
you feel
yeah.
good in there?
Yeah, we're good. It's smaller, and we're trying to be more efficient, and it's a little probably going to be a bit of a wait longer than it was before to get in.
So, if you're a customer, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Gordon Fricke. So, on Sunday morning, I was up at my usual 5 a.m. because I'm old now and I can't sleep. So I got up and I was watching Hot Rod Garage. You ever watch
yes,
that show?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
I love that show. It was my first time watching that one. I figure if I watch enough car shows, I'll actually be able to do what you do in 1,000 years.
Well, you handle some of our questions here.
Well, yeah, but I'm not good with a wrench and whatnot. But they were putting in, and I meant to ask you this, they were putting in nitrous, I believe, in a hot rod in a racer.
Yep.
What does nitrous do?
It's really not. It is laughing gas that you get at the dentist's office.
Really?
Yeah. Nitrous oxide, and what it does is it basically supercharges the air entering the engine, and you get tremendous power from that charge.
So is that like a turbo?
You're doing it simply by changing the content of the air going to the engine, and it's mind-snapping power. It's very hard on the engine. It has to be a well-built engine, and you have to meter the amount in just so much. But yeah, it's like, you know, doubling the power.
I mean, the woman on the show, very talented. They were talking about couple different ways you can throttle this nitrous. There's a switch where it'll do it all by itself. It brings it up to the amount that you need. And then there's the manual method, which must be terrifying if you go too far.
I think that manual method is if you're drag racing or you're all out, you just hammer that stuff on.
You hit the pedal all the way down and it ignites.
And then pour the nitrous to it and just hope it doesn't blow up the engine. But yeah, you're in for a rocket ride.
I assume that is not a street legal thing you could add to your vehicle.
Sure it is. Yeah, there's a lot
what?
Of cars. Yeah, there's cars riding around Central Ave with nitrous
you're
on them.
You're kidding
yeah,
me.
Yeah, we could put a kit if they. I think the kits are quite universal. You want to do it to your Cadillac?
Well, let's ask my wife first. Why don't we go to the phones? 800-348-2551. Larry's in Poughkeepsie. Larry, how you doing?
I'm all right.
You're on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are you on speakerphone?
Yeah. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, a little bit. Go ahead. Give it a shot.
Okay. Just the other day, or actually yesterday, I clipped the curb and I cut the rubber part of the sidewall of the tire. Big cut, but it's not down to the cords. Is there a reason I should replace that tire?
Yeah, it's a good question, because during state inspections, we do check, among other things, tires and sidewall cuts. And the way it reads is, if that sidewall cut did not contact the cords, in other words, if you peel that back and look in there very carefully, you know, flashlight, or, you know, put on your number two cheater glasses or whatever, and if you see any cords or fabric in there, it's not good. It could potentially upset the strength of the side of that tire. If you cut any of them, you're done, and you will eventually, right, or you may see a little bulge happening. But yeah, that's basically the general rule of checking a tire that got the sidewall gouged out.
Mm-hmm. Second question. The car's all-wheel drive. This tire is about 20% worn. If I just replace one tire, am I going to be running into trouble?
Well, fine question.
Yeah, it's a really good question, because it depends on the manufacturer of the car. Some are very intolerant. Subaru, for example, says if you put on a tire that is 2/32 of an inch or more difference in tread depth, the all-wheel drive system won't like it, even though they can wear to that point while normally driving the car if you don't rotate them. Volkswagen, I think, is a little bit more loose on the amount of tread difference between the new tire and the other three. What I would do, and I take it you have a Golf All-Track, is that correct?
Similar.
Or is it a Sport Wagon? Okay, yeah, the Sport Wagon. It's the same base car as the All-Track.
Yeah, it's the Haldex.
Yep. I would be safe and call a Volkswagen dealer, because I'm sure that question gets asked them a lot. I think the tolerance is fairly wide on that car, but just be sure. Your owner's manual may even go into that, because it's a very common event to have a tire failure on an all-wheel drive car. What do you do? So, yeah, it's a very good thing to check into if you do that.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. A couple emails here, and then we'll take a break and then hit the phones in earnest. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and the first time in quite a while. This email from Dennis. 2014 Subaru Legacy is the subject heading. Driving my car recently, suddenly all the dash lights went on, and I had repair facility repair it. They say they replaced sensors. 2 weeks later, another repair facility says one cylinder has low compression. The vehicle has 170K. Any experience on this type of problem? Any advice would be appreciated.
Yeah, it's not that uncommon, because those engines do live a pretty long life, that you can get a misfire for more than one reason. Oftentimes it's spark, which is the ignition coil or the spark plug. Other times it's a fuel injector concern, so the fuel is not making it to the cylinder in the correct amount, causing a misfire. And engine condition, meaning compression. The spark can be remedied, the fuel can be remedied, but the compression is a physical wear situation going on in the engine, either through the valves or the piston rings, and that is very expensive in terms of its repair in today's world, and that may be time to think about moving on to another vehicle.
Okay.
Because an engine is going to be a really expensive event, and is the car really worth putting that kind of money into at that point?
All right. John in Poughkeepsie writes, 2005 Toyota Tundra. My 05 Tundra, 165,000 miles. Check engine light, will not quit. MAF sensor, throttle body, transmission solenoid harness, all replaced. Sensors read okay on scan tools, so does the EVAP test. Mechanic is stumped and took it to the Toyota dealership, who were able to turn it off for about a month. I should mention light is off during summer driving, but returns as weather gets cooler. Any ideas?
Well, the key Ray, and we don't have it, is what is the code?
Right.
Because there can be 100 or more.
Yep.
So I don't know what system is giving him the winter. Is it a wintertime check engine light? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. In the summer, it's fine.
Here's my guess. It's probably an EVAP code, which the fuel system needs to maintain a certain pressure so the hydrocarbons don't escape into the atmosphere, the raw gas vapors.
Yeah.
And they're allowed a tolerance, and it's quite small. And if it exceeds that, the computer measures it and says, hey, you got a leak. Could be anything from the gas cap to the tank to all the hoses and vents. It could be half a million things.
Now, I guess the EVAP test was fine, or scan on the EVAP was okay.
At that time. I wonder what it would read in the winter when the light's back on.
Oh, interesting. But, all right, let's take a quick break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's cars, maintenance, repair, etc. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Charlie Parker on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Fine and dandy and sugar candy. It's Gordon Fricke today. Automotive maintenance and repair is the topic, so that song really has nothing to do with it, but it's a snappy little number. All right, back to the phones we go, 800-348-2551. Ann is in Montgomery. Ann, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Pretty well, yeah. You sound like you're on a submarine, but we'll go with it.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm in the car.
Okay.
So as long as you can hear me, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2024 Volvo XC40, about 6 months old, and I just got a letter from Volvo telling me that the price for the extended warranty was going to go up in about a week. So my question is whether it's worth it for me to get that extended warranty.
Boy, that's quite a question in today's world, because it's probably not from the manufacturer, but from the aftermarket. There are so many scams and phony and terrible aftermarket or extended warranty companies out there. It's almost impossible to sort through them. One question I have for you, is this from the dealership and or is it a Volvo product, or is it from the dealership and it's just under the guise of an extended warranty?
Well, I don't have the letter in front of me, but I'm going to say it is a Volvo product.
Yeah, I'd be super careful as to who's administering that warranty. Because there are some big names out there selling these on TV ads and radio
ads. Oh, I see the
ads
all the time, yeah.
And some of these celebrities tell you that they wouldn't drive a car without it. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, these guys are so wealthy, they don't have cars that need warranties, right?
Right.
But
that's right.
I would be very careful who administered it and question that dealership if that's where you're getting the mailing from or the information from. They're very expensive, and they want to pressure you into buying it. That's why they're giving you the week. They're not, you know, again, without seeing who it is and not knowing how much they're asking for the policy, your car has a pretty extensive warranty to start with, and you have a lot of powertrain beyond the bumper to bumper. How long do you plan on keeping this car?
Right. Forever?
Well, I would consider it, but I would wait.
Let me define forever.
Okay.
I had my last Volvo for about 18 years, and now I'm 70. And so if I keep this one for 18 years, I should not be driving anymore.
That's true, Ann. That's very true.
Unfortunately, in today's technological world of cars, you are in a rolling computer with screens and sensors and... I don't know if you're going to get 18 years out of the car. You might be able to, but it could be hair pulling towards the end. I would question very carefully who's administering it, how much it covers. Try to weigh out the cost of that plan because they're not cheap.
And thanks, Ann, for the call. And, you know, you'll periodically get them. I don't know how they get the databases.
All the time.
That, oh, well, your Nissan is, we can extend your warranty, but it's, you look at the fine print and it's, some of them I'm sure are fine. The ones I've received are a little sketchy.
Some is a very limited term in this in this world of extended warranties.
By the way, how well do you know your codes on the top of your head?
Well, there's a lot of ones that come up all the time. What do you got?
Okay, so remember we talked about John and Poughkeepsie's 2005 Tundra with the check engine light that would not work, that wouldn't go off unless it was summer.
And yes.
He wrote back. I didn't realize this.
Nice.
I forgot to mention, codes are PO171 and PO174.
Yeah, those are lean codes.
Yeah.
And they are a bit elusive, but they have to do with the fuel-air mixture is a little bit too much on the lean side.
So that's a sensor nowadays?
No, it's probably a what they call a wrong air leak somewhere. A gasket, a mass airflow sensor, which you've been through a bunch
Finally got it working, man.
And air leaks anywhere between the mass airflow sensor and the engine will trip it. Crankcase ventilation systems are very elusive in creating those lean codes. And it's too much to go into here, but it's some type of a air leak or wrong air that's happening.
Question, would nitrous help in this case?
It might cover it up for a little while.
Okay.
Want to get him a kit?
Sure. Well, I think we should.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe not. Let's go to the phones again and to Greenville. John, you're on.
Hi. I've got a 2013 Toyota Highlander. It's got 150,000 miles on it. Last week I was driving it and I noticed I couldn't shift in the manual. And then when I put it in the park, it shut the engine off. So then the code got read as a P705, and it looks like it's the neutral safety switch, but they're a couple $100 for the switch, and it's a couple hours of labor. I'm just wondering, is there a fuse that would cause that too, or is it probably pretty much the switch at that point, if it's doing what I'm saying?
Yeah, no fuse in your case. Is the shift lever harder to move than it used to be?
No, that seems fine.
Because we see this a lot with a lot of vehicles. Subarus are common to do this. Had a Kia Soul in this morning. The mechanism, the shift mechanism, gets corroded, and it's hard to move.
Yeah.
So you're not truly 100% in the gear position you think you're in. The computer notices that it's off just a touch, and it'll throw a code. It sometimes won't start. And I've had Subarus that won't start because the lever says park, and the light on the dash says park, but it didn't go 100% in. So I'm always very careful that the mechanism is free and lubed up and is really moving properly, that you're really in the gear you think you're in.
Interesting.
But that range position sensor that you're talking about is definitely not an uncommon event.
Is the when you're talking about keeping that lubricated, is both like under the shifter and in the engine compartment?
Yeah, anything that moves when you operate that shifter. So inside the car, if you can get to it, and out at the transmission where that thing is out in the elements.
Because where that, you know, it's pretty rusted, the bolts that are the shifting linkage that's connected to the safety switch. I'm not a mechanic by any means. It doesn't look too hard, but I'm thinking, you know, if I start working on this and, you know, the bolt, I'm not exactly sure how it connects, because the switch, when I look at it, it fits over like a shaft, and the shaft is just smooth. But then when I look at the shifting linkage, it's got a threaded bolt and nut on. Like, well, how does that connect?
There's a flat
to the center of that
switch. There's a flat spot in the shaft that lines up when you put that switch over it. But I don't think yours has an adjustment range. Some do, and you got to tweak them with a scan tool. I think I would hire that job out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. You know, my wife's 2018 Traverse has this issue where you park it. You go into park, and sometimes when you go to press the button and turn the car off, it says shift to park.
Yes.
And this is a known issue. and there's a switch. I looked this up on YouTube. We took it into the dealership, but it was during the pandemic, and the supply chain was ridiculous.
Oh,
and they
couldn't, they
cleaned it, I think, but did not replace the switch. But there is a switch in the center console, and I, of course, looked on YouTube. I haven't done it yet, but you could take the whole thing off, and it looks like a fairly simple thing to swap out.
And it tells the computer that you are truly in park.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's going on, I think, with this last caller, or something to do with what range it's in.
All right, and of course, the car's now out of warranty.
Of course.
Thanks to the pandemic. All right, let's go to John in Hudson. And hello, John.
Oh, hey there. I have a 2015 Volvo V60. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes. Hello. Hi, you're on. Welcome to the show.
Oh, okay. I have a 2015 Volvo V60. I have 135,000 miles on it. It's been a great car, but I think at least since the last 35,000 miles, I do regular scheduled oil changes, but I am having to add like a quart or sometimes 2 quarts in between oil changes. And my regular mechanic, he's done, you know, like engine cleaning oil supplement. I think it's called BG. He did that twice. He thought that would resolve the issue. He also changed the oil separator. I think it's called PCV. That did not resolve the issue. I don't have a leak. I've had it, you know, checked multiple times. So do you have any idea what could be causing this oil leakage that I think it's going into the engine?
Right. Uh-oh. Yeah. It at this stage, it's a pretty normal condition. The car manufacturers quite some time ago now, probably 10 years ago, maybe even longer, were under pressure, as they always are, by EPA or by the government to get better fuel economy. So they're constantly tweaking the vehicles, how to get better economy. And one of the things the engineers discovered that if they made the engine spin more freely, you'd get some free power out of it and it'd be more efficient and use a little bit less gas. So they said, we're going to put lower tension piston rings in the engine. So if you've got a six-cylinder car, there's six pistons with six sets of rings all scraping the cylinder walls. If you free them up, you're going to get some free horsepower and some efficiency. So they did that. The only downside of that is you are now increasing the engine's oil consumption, and as it ages, it gets worse and worse and worse. So now you're using a little bit less gas, and you're burning up a lot more oil. They're saying that the rule now is a quart to 1,200 is perfectly acceptable. Are you in that range, 1,200 miles per quart of oil?
Twelve hundred. Well, right now, I mean, I'm changed. I think it was like 3,000 miles.
Before you needed a quart?
That I needed a quart, yeah.
Oh, you're in great shape.
Okay.
Yeah, you're in fine shape. Yeah, if you're not adding
so
a quart
you don't
of...
Think that...
No, if you...
You think that this is normal? My mechanic seems to think that the oil sort of leaching into the engine is going to cause deterioration, and I was afraid it might be a precursor to needing to change my turbo, which I really don't want to have to deal with that expense.
Yeah, well, you also, yes, if you have a turbocharged engine, you can start to lose oil through the turbo. If the turbo shaft bearing gets a little worn, it gives the seal a little more grief, and you can bring some oil through the turbocharger, yes. But if you're only putting a quart in that car at 3,000 miles, you're fine. I wouldn't be worried about anything yet. Just keep track of it.
Okay. John, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Tell you what, an email here from Garrett, and then we'll go back to the phones. Garrett says, two-part question. Just did the brakes and rotors and calipers on my wife's car. What's a good rule of thumb for the amount you should bleed off the brake calipers? That's one.
Until there's no more air coming out when you do the bleed.
Yep.
So basically...
No bubbles?
Yeah, what we do is when we change all that stuff, I first do a gravity bleed. Leave the bleeders loose, put a pan under it, clean your wrenches, clean your hands, do something else, and let those calipers fill up with fluid, and it'll start to dribble out of those bleeders. Once you've got a nice stream dribbling out, tighten them up, and then get your assistant to go in the car and pump up the brake pedal. Usually by 3 pump-ups and let the fluid out, you're in great shape per wheel.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second part of Garrett's question, the AC compressor clutch won't kick on. I checked relays, fuses, checked power, makes it to the compressor. Would low Freon cause the clutch to not engage? Answer is yes, depending on the car.
Yes. You answered the question.
I did it on my 89 DeVille, or 99 DeVille.
There is a low-pressure safety switch that says to the computer, well, yeah, it's an onboard computer nowadays. Previously, it was all just switches and relays.
Yeah.
But if the pressure gets too low, it won't turn on the compressor, because otherwise the compressor will run till the cows come home.
Right, and you have to fool it, basically, to fill that sucker.
You can do that, yes. You power it on or bypass that switch.
Yeah, I did that, and then the head gasket blew, so it didn't really matter after that. So let's go back to the phones. Tom and Valencia, you're on.
Hi there. I have a Honda CR-V 2017. We've had some issues that the engines were prone to, apparently, where gas gets into the oil and causes a little bit of an evaporative smell. It's something that I guess Honda has been sort of dodging a recall on that item. The car has 141,000 miles on it, and now that it seems like the turbo has failed, and so we hear this sort of rattling sound between 1500 RPM and 2000 RPM. Other than that, the car has almost no rust. Other than that, a spot on the hood from chips from the road and so forth. And I guess I'm just trying to figure out, is it worth having that turbo looked at and replaced, or is it time to move on?
Well, has it been diagnosed that it does need a turbocharger?
By one place, yes. We had that sort of coolant issues where the coolant shows as low, but we've had 3 different pressure tests by different garages, and there's no coolant leak from what they're seeing. The pressure tests are all fine. I brought it to a dealership with regard to the turbo piece, or I brought it to a shop for the turbo piece. I'm considering bringing it to Honda because I feel like maybe that's the place to have that looked at. I know it's out of warranty and so forth, but for a second opinion, any thoughts on that?
Generally, when your turbocharger is failing, you're going to notice several symptoms. Low power, whining noise that speeds up and slows down as you throttle the vehicle, and or a lot of oil pouring out of the exhaust. Depending on how hard it is to get to the turbo, you can take the intake boot off of it and reach in there and see if the shaft is super loose and wobbling. But if somebody's determined you do need one, a lot of things have to be considered because it's not a cheap job. I don't know what it is on a CR-V, but we did one on a Volkswagen Golf Sport Wagon a couple of years ago. And if I remember correctly, that job was between $2,800 and
$3,500. For a turbo?
For the job, depending on where you bought the parts and who did the work. So if Honda's in the same league, if you're into a if you already priced this thing?
No, I mean, I've seen pricing at, just looking online of around $2,500 to $3,000 is what they're saying.
Yeah, so you got to.
But the thing is, you only hear that rattle sound. It almost sounded like an exhaust sound between like 1,500 RPM and 2,000 RPM.
Yeah,
outside of
those
range,
blink.
You don't hear it.
Yeah, see, that's Ray's on to something, which I'm thinking you really want to rule out that rattling is not from an exhaust shield or something to do with the exhaust system that's creating that rattle, because the turbo usually won't give you a rattle. I mean, it can make noises, but if that rattle is only there at a certain RPM range, I'd be really careful that it might just be exhaust related,
which would be fairly cheap.
Yeah, it wouldn't be $3,000.
No way, man.
Yeah, okay, and then we did have the mechanic look at that, and he did take a look at the heat shields, and it didn't seem to be that. But that was my first go-to as well, given the sound. So, all right. I mean, but overall, in terms of Hondas, I think of those as long life cars.
They are.
So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of, you know, 140,000 miles is kind of young. We had a Subaru Forester that went to 290.
Oh, good for you.
If
you're going to put that kind of money into a car, definitely Honda, Toyota, you know, the big long life cars, it's much less of a gamble.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot. A couple quick questions before we hit the break. One, how could a station wagon ever be called a sport? It's like a sport minivan. But two, why would you want to put a turbo kit on a station wagon?
Well, see, back in the early days, turbochargers were pure performance items. Now they're integral with the engine. They take a small engine and make it way more powerful, but also super efficient on the other end.
Yeah.
So you're getting the best of both worlds. And the technology and development of turbocharged engines now is so good that so many cars have them, and they don't remember they used to advertise them on in the 80s and 90s. Saab would have big letters that said turbo.
Porsche 930 turbo.
Turbo,
you got something
that stood out. It was like a calling card. Now they're just blended in. You don't even know the difference.
Interesting. Let's take a break. Gordon Frick, he's our guest today. It's Cars Repair and Such. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop. It's Cars and Repairs and Such. Gordon Fricke is our guest from Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Kim in Cohoes writes, I bought a 2022 Kia Soul last year. Love the car, but it gets condensation on the interior windows in the winter, turns to ice, which creates a mess scraping it off. I asked the dealer about it, and they passed it off. The other night, there was condensation on my hood. It was a hot night, and the car was parked all day. Our other car had none. What do you think?
It's very strange.
Yeah.
The interior condensation usually is from some kind of a water leak. Either the air conditioning drain is not draining properly and there's water getting in the carpet or the padding under it that you don't see or feel.
Yeah.
And or we see a lot of sunroofs leaking, whether this car has one or not. But the sunroof drains plug and leak. You can also get leaks from other areas. If the windshield's been replaced, sometimes it doesn't get 100% sealed back up properly. I'm guessing the car may be having a little bit of a water ingestion problem, to use a big word.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very public radio of you. All right. Jerome has a 2024 Camry SE. And Jerome writes, I recently bought a 2024 Toyota Camry SE. It came with aluminum rims and low-profile tires. I asked the dealer for steel rims that I could mount regular profile snow tires as to avoid ruining the aluminum rims in winter. Also, I wouldn't have to break down the tires from the rims to switch. They were unable to handle this. I find it hard to believe that this isn't possible. Who would be able to help me with this?
Yeah, it's very possible. And without advertising for anybody.
Good.
But you can go on the internet. And there's some really good long-term tire suppliers out there that will actually talk to you. Because if you have some questions, you can get tech guys on the phone, and they'll set you up with a wheel and tire package for winter, ship it to your house, mounted, balanced, and full of air.
Wow. You know, watching this Hot Rod Garage show on Sunday morning at 5 a.m., they put these huge tires on the rims, it didn't look that tough. A couple people could do it, yeah?
Yeah, that's a good show. She's very, very talented.
Great welder.
I don't remember their names because I don't watch that many of those shows, but I have stumbled upon it. I think it's a good show.
Her welding skills seem excellent.
Yeah.
Let's go to Steve in Lanesboro. Steve, you're on.
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome.
Fantastic. I've got a 2010 Toyota Tundra. It got 219,000 miles on it. It's a fantastic truck. It's beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. It's got a 5.7 liter in a VA. It's I-Force. There's no rust on it at all, no rot. It's got the fancy seats in it, leather seats. It's all air. It's a beautiful truck. It really is. Well, 3 days ago, I went to start it, and the starter spun over. It spun like there was something wrong with it, you know. Needed a new starter, I think. So I went to a garage, and I told him, I said, take a look at the guy who does all my oil changes and stuff. And he said, the starter's going on. I said, well, I'll order me a new one. You know, I don't want to mess around with it. So he said he ordered it, and then he said, bring it in. He says, and I can change it. It'll only take a couple hours.
Okay.
And he called me up, and he goes, oh, no, it's going to take more than a couple hours. It's about 7 hours to change the starter.
Okay.
Does that sound normal?
Oh, 7 hours to change a starter.
It can be.
Depending on the vehicle?
Oh, yes. Some starters are absolutely buried alive.
Ah.
And usually the ones that are buried alive are the ones that fail. The ones that are nice and quick and easy to change last forever. I don't know on that particular truck. However, I do know that the Tundra starters are very, very time-consuming. We've changed starters on some vehicles that were... like BMW six-cylinder vehicles, the starters, you have to take the intake manifold 80% out of the way to even get to it.
Ridiculous. The labor alone.
Just to test it adequately, to get in there and confirm that it's bad, is 2 hours to confirm the test. He's probably, judging the age of the vehicle, there could be some corrosion issues of getting stuff apart to get to that starter.
Yeah.
No, that could be the truth.
Wow. All right, Steve. Thanks a lot for that one. Now, you can rebuild a starter. What actually goes wrong when a starter goes south?
Well, there was a time where shops did rebuild starters. And back when I went to one of the mechanics training schools, we actually did rebuild them. You don't do that anymore.
No.
But brushes wear out. The bushings that hold the shaft where you can also have winding problems, electrical problems within the starter and the gear drive. You know, in this world, you just replace it with a completely remanufactured part.
Yeah. They used to be some of these old GM cars, gosh, they were easy. You open the hood, there it is.
I bring your Le Mans into the show a lot.
Yeah.
But to change a starter in that car, if you had a lift, I don't know, a half hour, you know.
Did you even need a lift? I did that thing myself in the driveway.
You can jack them up, throw some stands under it, and it's still not horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. Enough reminiscing with Gordon Fricke. We'll go to Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Gordon. Good show.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello.
I've got a question about hybrids. I have a hybrid, a 2019 Kia Niro that I like a lot. I've had it for a few years. But I've got two questions. On a hybrid braking system, if you need brake work, is it just like any other braking system on any other car? Or I know you have the regenerative energy capture technology that's part of the hybrid. You know, system captures that brake mechanical energy, but is that integral to the brake system so that a brake job or any kind of brake work is compounded by that? You know, how integral is that to just the brake job?
Not at all. Two different things entirely. The brakes are still what they were prior to it being a hybrid. The regen braking occurs through the drive axles. So when you take your foot off the, I guess you'd call it the accelerator pedal, the momentum of the car goes through the drive axles and the motors turn into generators. So anyway, to answer your question, no connection. It's just like doing brakes on a non-hybrid vehicle.
So I think ultimately I'm just trying to, you know, guess whether I would entrust a brake job to, you know, have local guys that I like or whether on a hybrid is something that, you know, that's more specialized due to the doesn't sound like it's any more specialized than any other regular brakes.
Yeah, I mean, we run into a lot of Priuses primarily, but other hybrids. But no, standard braking, nothing to be afraid of.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go now to Albany, New York. Tom, you're on.
Hi there. Got a 2017 Ford Transit Connect, the passenger version, not the cargo version. And last spring, summer, when the weather started getting warm, my air conditioning started failing and failing and just slowly getting worse. So I took it to a Pep Boys. I said, there's got to be a slow leak. They said, well, there might be, but we can't find it. So they recharged it. And it got me through the rest of the summer. And this year, 3 months ago, same thing happening. I said, okay, I'll go to a Ford dealership. Took it to them. They said, we can't find this slow leak. They recharged it. And guess what? Today, my air conditioning is no longer working. So is this going to be somewhere in the AC system where they can't easily access it, and they're going to have to replace this and that and the other thing and a ton of labor? I guess the bottom line question is, am I able to do simple recharges, you know, like every May myself? Is there a kit that I can use for a 2017 Transit Connect?
Well, the problem with the kits are they're okay if you didn't lose all of the refrigerant, which maybe you haven't been. If there's a leak large enough to lose all of it, now you're at the same basic pressure as the atmosphere, and then the likelihood of getting moisture in the system is possible, mm-hmm. and that's bad for an AC system. That's why when you do AC work, you put a vacuum on the system. You evacuate it to get the moisture, in essence, boiled out.
Mm.
But
if there's a spot that they can't find where this leak is that hidden somewhere where they all of a sudden the labor's going to go ching, ching, ching? We got to replace this whole part. It usually makes that sound. Places,
yeah.
Two different places could not find this. And it is a gradual thing. It's not like this one day I turn on, there's nothing.
Right. Now, what you're experiencing is quite common and very frustrating because. Some of the leak could be from the evaporator, and that's the part inside the dashboard with you. They're very tough to access, so you use a leak detector that measures the air, and then if it sniffs out refrigerant, it sounds an alarm. And if the leak is tiny, it may be really hard to find it in what they've been experiencing coming from. You hate to condemn an evaporator because that can be a really horrible job. Does a charge get you through the entire season now or no?
No, we're in August, and this was about 3 months ago.
Of course, it's been very, very hot and humid. So AC system's been...
You better believe it, yes.
Yeah, AC system's been working super hard. I don't know. You could do this. You could get it recharged, get you through this season, and then reboot if you still have the vehicle and see what you want to do with it next year.
Tom, thanks a lot. To Ballston Lake, Maryland, you're... Marilyn, a lot of noise there. Are you with us?
I'm here, yes. Thank you.
Go ahead.
My question is on a seat. My husband's BMW, the seat is too large for my legs. I'm not a short person, but my legs are kind of short. And when we go for a long ride to family and visit friends, it will put my legs to sleep. It cuts off some of the circulation because the actual part of the seat is too long. So is there something, some aftermarket something that I could get to change where my seat and my legs are in the seat? Any ideas for me?
So are you saying that the bottom of the seat is too tight into your, like, calves? Is the seat bottom is, like, too long?
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
And if this is one of the cars, I don't know if they started in that year, but there's an extra little pullout that you can even make it longer.
Yes.
Can't you tuck it back in further?
Yeah. I was going to ask you that because some of those cars did have that thing that pulled out. Well, you can do a couple things. you could, and this could be more than you want to get involved in, but if you could find a auto upholstery shop, they may be able to take that pullout unit and take a bunch of stuff out of it, tighten it back up, and now you don't have such a big bottom pullout. And or you could buy these pads that people use if they have lower back pain that fits right behind you. And I think they may push you out a little bit more forward. You could try one of those. That'd be a quick and easy experiment. And that might just get your legs pushed out further so that doesn't happen.
Hmm. Okay.
Or you get another car.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, that's the newer of the two. So that will probably be around for a few more years. But no, I was contemplating and haven't acted on getting something in the back. But I thought, oh, good time for a question for you.
Yeah, try it.
Thanks, Marilyn. Appreciate the call. You think a BMW, for Pete's sake, they're not cheap. You'd think they'd be eminently customizable as far as your seat position.
So here's my thing to BMW. Now, maybe this is a unique question and they don't get this much, but maybe the range of that thing should be so you can bring it in further than you can push it out. You know what I'm saying? You know the device she's talking about?
Yeah.
That bottom of the seat pushes out against your calves. And I've been in cars, and as you know, Ray, I'm not a super tall guy. So my legs would... Any of those cars with those bottom devices, I've got them in all the way.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what she's talking about.
Okay. Here's one for you from James. About 40 years ago, a new product came on the market called Splitfire Spark Plugs. Mm. Apparently, they're supposed to be another way to get more performance from your engine. Ever use them? And what do you think of this idea of doubling the spark plug power?
Wow.
You ever hear of those?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's up?
I asked one of my suppliers about those because they started showing up, and the answer was kind of funny. He said, we don't sell very many of them.
Really?
It's would I go so far as to calling it a gimmick? No, but are you going to notice any difference if you put that Splitfire plug in place of a high-quality plug that would normally go in your vehicle? Probably not.
You only need a certain amount of voltage to do the job. Anything else is wasted, right?
Well, they're saying that spreads the spark out and is a more intense light up of the flame in the cylinder. I don't know. If they were that fantastic, I would think that they would be standard equipment on a lot of cars, and they're not.
Okay.
You know?
All right. I guess we're about out of time here. I don't think we can take another call. Let me just see if we have another. Okay. This one's quick. Michael and Rhinebeck. Coolant bypass valve replacement on a 2019 Subaru Forester with 11,000 miles. Expensive repair? Question mark.
What year's the car? 19 Forester?
2019 Forester, yeah.
Well, it's a flat engine, but, I mean, I don't think it's in the worst location. I haven't changed one, so I don't know if it's a horrible job or not.
All right. Well, listen, we obviously had tons of calls and emails. People have been waiting for 3 months for you to be back.
Oh, boy. Well, it was fun to come back. It was a gorgeous day to come in.
Can you do me a favor and come back next month?
Absolutely.
Gordon Frick.
No more closings, I don't think, for a while.
Let's hope. Support comes from the Eddie Memorial Senior Living Campus in Troy. Beechwood for active independent seniors, the Terrace at Eddie Memorial providing assisted living, plus Eddie Memorial Geriatric Center, skilled nursing care, Eddie, E-D-D-Y, seniorliving.com. And the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls offering creative programs on tours for all ages. This summer, open Thursday through Monday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., hydecollection.org. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. I'm so sorry if we didn't get to you. Lines were loaded, and so were the emails. And, you know, we'll do it again next month. Thanks to Ed Rosen for screening the calls. Zachary Malloy was at the helm in the control room. Tomorrow, it's Pets and Vets with Ron Scharf. That's tomorrow at 2. I'm Ray Graff. Have a good rest of your day.